This is take three. Amen. Welcome to the Better Than One Marriage Podcast, where two are better than one because they get a good reward for their labor. And if one were to fall, she'll be there to pick him back up. I'm Ronald Corsi Jr.
And I'm Chelsea Corsi.
We're still married.
Sorry. When you look, having allergy issues immediately.
Just a lot of issues. What's going on today?
My nose started itching so bad.
Nose gets to itching. Mike's cutting in and out.
Sorry, excuse me, y'all.
Rebuke you, Satan. Mm-hmm. Why can't we just have this podcast for the people?
We don't know.
Especially talking about the first year of marriage. Mm-hmm. First year of marriage, what thought comes to mind? What word comes to mind? I'll tell you mine.
Okay.
Bills.
Okay.
Can you pay my bills, pay my telephone bill,
pay my automobile? The first word that came to my mind was tumultuous.
That's a very aggressive word choice that you went for.
It's the first word that came to my mind.
Nothing but tumult.
A lot of. Because if we really look at the timeline, right? Mm-hmm. We got married November 29th, go on our little honeymoon. Honeymoon is great. Mm-hmm. And then my boss calls me the day before we came home and says I was getting laid off. Yes. That was number one.
Pretty cocky.
So we get home. I worked for like two more weeks, and then that was the end. Mm-hmm. And then around February. So, yeah, that was December. Like mid-December, I was done working, laid off on unemployment now. Mm-hmm. But I was still babysitting these twins. And they were older, but their mom was homeschooling them. So I'm babysitting them twice a week. And their mom told me they were moving. And long story short, around February, she says that she has shingles. And she had told me she was going to give me notice, like, when they found a house in Florida, because they were trying to move to Florida. Mm-hmm. And she said, no, they had a house. Her husband was already there, but she needed to sell the house she was in. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. So she told me she would let me know when they got a buyer for their house. Mm-hmm. And they were going to leave so that I could find somewhere to go, you know, or just some other type of work. And I'm like, okay. So, but February comes, she says she has shingles, and then I never hear from her or see them again. And like a month later, I drove past their house and there were other cars there. And I was just like, all right.
People move right
in. Well, meanwhile, it's like I wasn't looking for another job yet because I was trying to do you the courtesy of not losing childcare while you're here.
Right.
You know, because she was still working. She was trying to work until she left. You know, so I'm trying to do you a solid. I just needed you to let me know you were leaving. That's all.
Doing me dirty.
It was pretty bad. How dare you. Yeah, so that happens. Then we find out something was wrong with the taxes and we owed money.
Wow.
And literally, I feel like we found out I was pregnant like the day before or something like that. Or just like days before. I remember it was very shortly after finding out I was pregnant, which we did not plan. Mm-hmm. That was just I'm pregnant.
Oh, so she's pregnant.
And then, oh, so you owe some money for taxes. And then
several thousand.
Right.
It was like $4,000.
Yeah, it wasn't low.
I was like, don't got it.
Yeah.
Don't got it.
Yeah. And then then I'm pregnant. I don't feel well. Wow. And so, you know, just dealing with the, like, I'm nauseous. Everything stinks. And now I have sciatica. And then I have the round ligament pain and like all the things. Like, it was just not a fun pregnancy. And then we have a newborn and go through that newborn phase, and she wouldn't take no bottles. Mm-hmm. And she wouldn't go to Ron. Definitely wasn't sleeping through the night. Nah. It was hectic.
It was.
Like all in a year. Because she was born before our first anniversary.
Certainly was. Yeah, I literally that timeline, because you're better at the timelines. I didn't even realize the timelines and stuff just kind of stacking up.
Yeah.
I'd be forgetting about the tag. Like, I forget that happened. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize it was in our first year of marriage.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it was at some other time, which is interesting. But when you don't got no money and you're really trying to figure things out, that's why I said bills. Mm-hmm. Apparently, I did know.
Right? Yep.
tax bills.
Right.
It's like when you don't have no money and you don't have no plan, it's like the stuff you'd be falling into is going to be catching you off guard, like, mm-hmm. constantly. Like, man, I didn't see that coming, and I didn't see this coming. I definitely didn't see the taxes coming. Didn't see her getting pregnant necessarily.
That wasn't our plan.
Wasn't our plan. Didn't Not expect right away. It. That certainly didn't be like, oh, well, you just got married. She ain't got no job now. Yep. Really? Okay. Well, that's wonderful. And, and, you know, I'm working everywhere and just trying to get things together. Oh,
that was a whole nother thing.
Yeah.
Our minister of music left the church and you became the minister of music at our church.
Right.
And that was right after you trying to lessen
right.
your workload with how funny. Much you had to play at church.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
You out here getting fired.
Yeah. And we were just struggling with that. Like, right. I mean, and the Lord knows, but because, yeah. you know, that was a pay increase for you. But like,
yeah.
it just, the Lord knows. But
not as much as I thought it would be, though, because they wasn't trying to pay me what they was paying him.
Right. No, I remember that.
Which is very thuggy.
Very thuggy.
But that's fine. He was doing something else. But mm-hmm. I don't think he was doing that much else for them to be like, oh, well, we're going to give you half.
Right.
Half.
Mm-hmm.
She's talking about half.
Yeah, no, yeah. that's
but
it was a lot, and we struggled with just being able to spend time together and everything at that yeah. point, because you had to like build from scratch mm-hmm. with like repertoire with all the different groups and everything.
Yeah.
So you would be at work all day and then come home and be rehearsing, and then I'd be up all night with the baby. That was our life after she was born.
Yeah, and just want to forewarn, like. Because you have regrets, but a part of the regret is that you didn't, and I'm saying you as a general term, not
sure.
you,
mm-hmm.
even me, you know, that you have these regrets about things that, some of these things are out of your control, but the part of your control that you have is that you can have plans.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we kind of went in and didn't really have a plan. Like, I didn't have no real budget.
Mm-hmm.
Like, or I'm sorry, I did not have a budget. Why would I say a real budget? What is a fake budget? I ain't had no budget.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have like plans on communicating, and we didn't necessarily plan for having a child, so I didn't have a plan for that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, what do we do?
Mm-hmm.
Are we gonna? I feel like maybe we probably would have talked about it by then. Like, what are we gonna do with our kids?
Right.
What are our actual plans for the future? Like, you know, we're always going to be trying to live here. Like, mm-hmm. what happens?
Mm-hmm.
And you go in and you find yourself just kind of in it without being prepared for it.
Yeah.
And so now this is on top of the fact that you just got married, you know.
Yeah.
You've been together. You've been, you know, you've been together. We had been together for years. But now it's like we're married. Like, we're actually together.
Mm-hmm.
You don't live somewhere else.
Yeah.
We're together now.
Yeah.
And being able to navigate that with no plan is like, like you can't navigate for the troubles that are going to come, but you can kind of expect them better when you have a plan.
Yeah.
Or you can navigate them better when you actually have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I regret from those times just like being unprepared, because the truth of the matter is, like, as the man, I just should have been better prepared for a lot of stuff.
I hear you, because I, you know, just as the role of a man goes in the marriage, but mm-hmm. yeah, I think that it also is, there may be like an advantage for people who didn't come straight from living at home. We were married young,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, we just and neither one of us like went away to college or anything like that. Like, that literally was our first experience not living with our parents.
Yeah.
And even when you do go away to college and stuff like that, like, some people have different experience. It depends on your family situation and financial situation. A lot of college kids do have to work and like pay for things, but a lot of them also don't.
Right.
So even with that, it depends on, you know, your family dynamic and whatnot, and just what's necessary for you. But I feel like when you get married later, which I'm not preaching that you should get married later, I'm just saying that there's an advantage in knowledge mm-hmm. of like what it's going to be like to pay all of the bills. And, you know, like, just just knowing yourself more, like knowing how you want to keep your house, knowing what meals you like to, that like what meals you know how to cook, you know, just certain things like that, which I think that it's like pros and cons here. Because for people who get married later, it's like you might struggle with being set in your ways.
You know, might.
You will. And used to just, oh, but this is my space and I do everything the way I want to do it, versus we built this together and this is our way. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a beauty of like, because now you and I can look back and be like, oh, we learned together.
Yeah.
And we grew together and we experienced all of this together. And look, we're still together. There's a beauty in that. But I think there can also be an advantage in knowing what conversations to have. I think that's what I'm trying to get at.
Okay.
Knowing what conversations to even have.
Okay, let's get into that. Like, what's one of those conversations we got to make sure we have?
What do you want in life? You know, like, what are our joint, because here's the thing too, you can't have two different sets of goals. Some people do have goals, but not joint goals, like where we discuss this and this is our plan. And it very much is a us and a ours. When you get married, it can't be this is what I'm doing with my life and this is what you're doing with yours.
Right.
It, I mean, it can be, but that's not going to work out well.
Be, yeah.
But, you know, so it's like, I think the first one is just like, okay, what are our life goals? And then what steps do we feel need to be taken toward meeting those goals? You know, whether that be, like you said, like, where are we going to live? What kind of career choices are we trying to make here? How do we want to raise our children? Like, are you going to stay home with the kids, or are you going to continue to work and we're going to put them, you know, just, and people's situations are different. I have a friend who, thank God her child was able to stay with her mother-in-law until she was school age, you know? So it's like, she didn't worry about like that 6 weeks and you got to put the baby somewhere with strangers, you know, because I know so many moms struggle with that. I feel so bad for them. They'd be crying and everything, like, my baby. And, you know, but you do what you got to do and you vet the place and everything. But, you know, but like, there's ideals, there's more ideal situations, you know, but like, just all those things, like planning, like you said, planning it out. What is the plan going to be so that when that time comes, we're not just under the gun trying to like, oh, well, we just got to do what we got to do because we didn't put anything in place. Yeah. We're just kind of flying by the seat of our pants now. And even conversations like, okay, is it okay if we get pregnant before we're trying to?
Right.
Because that can happen.
Yeah,
clearly. Here we are. Love her dearly, but, you know, definitely we're saying like maybe 2 years from now. That was what our conversation was.
That's what everybody's conversation is.
That's what everybody's conversation is, but it was 3 months.
Till
it was
found
3 months,
out.
And then we right exactly.
Yeah.
I found out because I was already not feeling good, so I was already like, you know, when we went to my first ultrasound, I was 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, it's like, and that's not super late, but you know, it's like, yeah, it's just things happen. But I think that you're so right about just if you kind of like just know what to expect, which I think premarital counseling is really paramount. I think our premarital counseling prepared us very well to communicate. And I think it prepared us very well to just know that things were going to happen and we were going to have to work it out and just be prepared to work it out.
Yeah.
And so like, we also kind of got to know each other's like trigger points, because like they had us talk about things, you know, that like we had never talked about, you know, like stuff came up where you were like, oh, this offended me. And I'm like, what? I didn't even know.
Certainly.
You know, having those types of conversations before you get married, because I feel like once you get married, just life is going to be hard enough.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you don't need to add on all of these underlying issues
You
have that you could have worked out already, that you just need to talk. Simple as that. Like, okay, you tell me and I'm like, oh, I didn't even know. And then I'm like, well, I'll try not to do that anymore. The end. That's simple.
Well, yeah, it seems like it.
You know, so then when life hits you, if you didn't have those conversations and didn't get to the bottom of that type of stuff and just know how to talk to each other and know how to treat each other,
yeah,
you know, then you're going to be blowing up on each other because that underlying stuff gets compounded with just life issues.
Yeah, adding bricks to the backpack.
Yeah.
You're already holding the backpack. It's like, well, let's put some bricks in
there. Right.
It's like, why? Please don't put the bricks in there. That's why the Bible says lay aside every weight and sin that easily besets us. It's easy for stuff to kind of throw us off our game. Especially when it's not even necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not necessary at all, but it's a weight.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like those weights of marriage is like baggage, unpreparedness, as I've said. And I guess maybe just a lack of understanding some things.
Mm-hmm.
And as I've said before, like I think like just the expectation of marriage is where marriages actually fall apart to me, is that... Mm-hmm. Is that you have this idea of what it's going to be like, and it's not that.
Yeah.
And so now, you know, I wish I had an analogy. Normally the Lord be giving me analogies these days. It's like you go to a let's say marriage is like going to a basketball game.
Mm-hmm.
And you have this idea of like, oh, when we get there, we're going to sit here. The food is going to be this.
Mm-hmm.
The game, the people playing are going to be this, and it's going to be great. And you go there, and you ain't sitting where you thought you was going to be sitting.
Mm-hmm.
The food you thought they would have, they don't have. And the players you thought were going to be playing aren't even playing.
Right.
And that's what marriage is. It's like, it's literally what marriage is.
And that's what marriage is.
And that's what marriage is. You go in with an expectation of like, hey, I'm going to be sitting on the court, and I'm going to get to eat the best food. Literally, when you go on the court, they have like people come and ask you what you want, right? You don't have to go. Like, you've paid enough. Trust me. Like, we'll just, what would you like?
Right.
I'll have this. Thank you. Bring it quickly. Amen. Right. But what happens is you're actually in the nosebleeds.
Right.
You're all the way at the back, and you can barely see the game. You can barely see the finish line, so to speak, right? And now you have to figure out how to get down to the court. You thought it would be on the court.
Mm-hmm.
You thought you'd be up close. You thought everything would be like easier than it's going to be.
Right. Like you've just already arrived at the prime experience.
We've gotten along so well. You know, everything's been working out. But there's a difference, like that oneness that comes, and the, gotta sneeze.
Bless you.
That was horrible. Here we go again. Yes. That oneness that comes from literally, you know, once you actually make them vows and God trying to make you into one thing.
Mm-hmm. Bless you.
Have mercy. It's never what you think it's going to be.
Yeah.
And no matter what your expectation is, your expectations are going to be wrong in some facets.
Yep.
You have the expectation like, hey, as a woman, my husband's going to love me. As a man, my woman's going to love me.
Mm-hmm.
I expect to have some sort of rapport based off of what we've had. But now all the things that you have to come into play.
Yeah.
How you were raised, what you think, your IDs, your ideologies, your philosophies, it all comes into play without you having to even think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like just the very fact that, oh, this guy likes to get up early in the morning and just get to moving around. I don't really like that. he don't like to chew his food with his mouth closed. I don't really like that either. I ain't seen him wash nair dish. We've been here several months. Mm-hmm. I ain't seen no dishwashing.
Even stuff like that. That's stuff to talk about.
It's stuff to talk about.
The chores. Who's going to do what?
Listen, I you almost always, you base how you did, or your ideologies going forward is based off of how you were raised.
Yeah.
Right? And if you were raised in a house where your dad didn't do no house chores, and you think that's right.
Mm-hmm.
You think that's right.
Or you just never even thought about it.
Or
never thought it through.
And that's it. That's actually the key.
Yeah.
Is that you didn't think anything of that. Like, oh, this is just how life is.
Yep.
This is normal. Mm-hmm. So now your expectation is like, oh, well, I'm a husband.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go in there. My wife is going to, you know, do everything.
Right.
Because that's what wives do.
Yeah.
It's not that was the dynamic of my parents' relationship. Is that that's what wives do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, that's... that's going to be a hurdle.
Yeah.
And the crazy part is this is not a 100-meter hurdle.
Right.
It's a 10,000-meter hurdle.
Right.
We got so many hurdles. Mm-hmm. But that's just one, like, actual, like, breaking down dishes and chores. And I grew up in a house where my father, I mean, he was actually very willing, like, pretty much anything physical, anything outdoorsy, like, you know, Linda, please. Please. Like, I wish somebody would say to my mother, could you anything outside? Like, the best you can get her to do is maybe cook something on the grill, because she cooks.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else, please. Could you clean that pool? I wish somebody would.
Clean the pool.
The laugh that
would
come.
You see the face I just made. No, I'm not cleaning a doggone pool.
See, and that's normal. Can you just skim it real quick? Just grab a cup.
No.
Listen, negative.
No, I cannot.
Can't imagine cutting grass, trimming hedges. Please.
I mean, I might skim the pool. I ain't cutting grass. Not with a husband.
See, but everything inside is like, she's like, anything inside is different. It's like,
yeah.
Yep. You know, anything that's not like, hey, you know, fix the water heater or something crazy.
Right.
Domestic things, like,
yeah.
She'll do all of that and mm-hmm. won't even think twice. But my father ain't never cooked a meal. A day. I'm 32 years old. I've never seen him cook. I've never seen him attempt to cook a meal.
That's something.
Yeah, that ain't gonna happen. So now I come in, and I have some of those expectations. Like, that's my natural inclination.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, well, I'm going to just be here. I'll do all the physical stuff and blah, blah, blah. And Chelsea just take care of all the domestic stuff. But that's not, you know, how our dynamic actually works.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had to talk about it
mm-hmm.
and work it out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just one hurdle.
Right.
Imagine a hurdle of money, Chelsea.
Yeah.
Not to keep bringing it back to money, but why not? The money is where somebody likes to spend, and then the other person is like, well, we need to save.
Yeah. Talk of it. You know, Ron, I feel like, because I'm like, I want to give people something really practical.
Yeah.
You know, I would say you really need to just sit down and imagine a day together. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, we wake up in the morning.
Yeah.
Like, literally, that might be the best thing for you to do. Sit down. Mm-hmm. What time are you waking up in the morning? All right, I usually wake up at this time. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, cool. Are you a morning person? No? Okay, I am. Okay, so maybe I'll drink my coffee out there.
Yeah.
Like, literally walk through your and I'm talking a work day, not a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Like, walk through a day on a weekday. And, like, just, okay, well, okay, breakfast time comes. And then what happens?
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, well, what are your expectations? You know, are you going to make breakfast? Am I going to make breakfast? You know, how do we eat? You know, blah, blah, blah. What do you like to eat for breakfast?
Yeah.
You know, what is the meal? Like, seriously, like, get super descriptive and just, like, go through a day together of how, like, so you can get a feel of what you think things are going to look like. And then after that, you can say, okay, and what are we going to do on the weekends?
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, we have a day off. What does that look like?
What does that look like?
What does that look like?
Yeah.
You know, okay, like.
Are we hiking?
Yeah, exactly. Because no, I'm not. So.
Double negative.
You know, so yeah, stuff like that. Like, just walk through, like, picture your life together and talk through it.
Mm.
What does this look like in your mind? Okay, that's what it looks like in my mind. Okay, that won't work for me because, okay, cool. Like, that won't work for you. All right, we could.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like the thing is, no matter how much you plan, you're never ready.
No.
It's same thing as having children. They always say, like, there's no book, there's no guide to raising children, even though they try. There's also no guide to everybody's marriage, even though they try. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you're never ready. But I think that the more prepared you are, the better.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, if you really just think all these things through, and really that has something to do too with, like, the oneness of just, like, knowing each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the more you talk about those things, until you live together, there's certain things you just possibly wouldn't know.
Right.
Like, because I've never experienced this with you. I've never seen you in this light. I've never spent this amount of time with you.
Right.
I've never seen you have to go through, like, tough decisions.
Yeah.
You know, especially, like, what if it's a type of person where, you know, like, they want to be to their self when they're having a hard day.
Yeah.
You know, versus someone who's like, can I come over
and cuddle
because I'm having a hard day.
Right.
So you don't know what they're doing when they're having their hard day. And now you get married and they disappeared today and you don't know why. And then they come home and you're like, well, where were you? oh, I had a hard day. I needed to blow off some steam. Like, oh, well, can we talk about it? No.
No. Why not? Why would we be talking about it?
And stuff like that. There's stuff like that where it's like the more talking you do about what things are going to look like, the better. But there's certain things that you're just going to learn over time by just being together all the time.
You have to, because you don't even know them.
Yeah.
I don't, because you don't know that it's a thing.
Yeah.
You think it's life.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. It's like expectations is like, wow, it's like the self-awareness that comes. It's really, that's the mirror of marriage. It's like, hey, I'm going to be aware for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to show you.
Yeah.
Like, this is
I'm
who you
bring
are.
It all up. Like, I'm hey, you know, you up. Do this.
Yeah. And that's literally one of our points of contention, not contention, but, you know, I feel like we shared this last week is that, you know, if I'm having a hard day, I don't want to talk about it or be around. And where if you're having, you know, a hard day, it's the opposite. You want to talk about it and you want me to be around. So that's like two completely opposite sides of the spectrum where we have to meet somewhere in the middle. But I'm still having to learn this lesson where I have to fight my natural inclination to just be like, oh, well, you know. Or maybe, and I said this towards you, because you'll be having a hard day. And in my mind, I'm like, well, maybe I should just let her be.
Right.
Whereas it's like, no, that's not how she operates. She needs you to be here at that time. She needs you to do the opposite of what you're doing. And that's like literally the beauty of marriage is, wow, like just having somebody who literally ends up like almost sometimes even knowing you better than you know yourself.
Yeah,
because it's easy to kind of look from the outside, and it's like somebody who has a problem, and the answer to the problem is obvious,
right?
But they can't see it because they're in it,
mm-hmm.
and somebody comes by and says, "Oh yeah, well all you need to do is this."
Yeah,
and sometimes that's your husband or wife.
You know, speaking of analogies,
yikes! Come on,
there
analogy.
Is a book called Big Dog, Little Dog. I feel funny because like all of my analogies deal with something dealing with children, but Big Dog, Little Dog. So they go to this hotel and the big dog is in a room with a small bed and the little dog is in a room with a big bed and they both were uncomfortable and like tossed and turned all night.
Yeah.
But there's a bird that had been flying back and forth between their windows.
Oh, yeah.
And then the next day the bird says, why don't y'all just switch rooms? And I feel like it's exactly what you're saying, where they probably hadn't even been in the other one's room to know that the other one had the bed that they needed.
Ooh.
But this bird had this, you know, what do you call it? Like a wide perspective, you know, where it could actually see both bedrooms and is like, so here's what you need to do. And that's the Lord.
The spirit. He's the dove.
That's the Lord. Yes, that's the dove. Send the dove out. Is there dry land out there yet? Because we can't get off and go see. I need you to tell me. I need you to tell me, Lord.
Yeah, you don't even know.
No, but seriously, and I love that you like kind of brought that out. That is like sometimes, a lot of times, that's your spouse.
Yeah.
Where your spouse is like, okay, but I'm like watching you all the time and I spend time and I'm hearing you talk all the time. And I know you.
That's true. That's hard.
Yeah. Cause you can't really come outside of yourself and watch yourself and hear yourself. And so the way others perceive you is different than the way you perceive yourself.
Yeah. That's hard, especially for men. That's a hard one. Cause y'all, I feel like women are a little more, first of all, you're just a little more in tune with just life, right? But then you're also more communicative, so it's natural that you'll be the one to be like, hey, you're doing such and such and such,
right?
Whereas men don't really want to come at women anyway. We'll just kind of let you be. You'll be all right, whatever.
Which is not always the best.
It's not, right? But it's not natural. Typically it's not natural. But that can be a hard one. Like your pride can't get in the way of, you know, somebody telling you the truth. That's the hardest thing to one of the hardest things to accept is just the truth and bringing your pride and your ego into it. And what you think about yourself is like, no, like your thoughts about yourself are yours. That's fine. But here I still have this mirror. Like I'm still the mirror, you know, whatever you're doing makes me feel a certain way. You can't be like, no, it doesn't.
Right.
You can't be like, I'm not black.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, no, that's not how this works. You're
right.
Black. You can't tell me. That's the key, is like, you can't tell me how I feel.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, that's one of those expectation things, that where your expectation is that, well, that's a life expectation. I mean, and it comes naturally, is that, you know, how I feel is right. Mm-hmm. Which is interesting. Right. I feel like I'm actually one of the few people, I don't always feel like I'm necessarily right. Mm. Well, you may not know that, but
I was going to say, even when you tell. Don't feel like, no, because you'll say it later. Mm. And that's like one of the hardest things for me. Because like, you're going to play devil's advocate whether you agree or disagree. Like, yeah. I could be like, yeah, because everybody knows the sky is blue. And you're like, I mean, but it could be like a grayish blue. And I'm like, no, it's just blue. It's just, well, I mean, but you never know. Like, somebody else might see it as, and I'm just like, no, but the sky is blue. Yes. And then I start getting irritated because I'm just like, why are you arguing with me about something that's true? And then you'd be like, I'm not saying it's not true. I'm just saying that. I'm like, well, then just why can't it. You just say, yes, the sky is blue?
I'm not saying it's not true. I'm just saying.
It's like, nah, we have to.
Got
to
talk about it.
I don't know. You're just funny.
But I come from like all the sects of Christianity. It's like, y'all have some kind of like standard foundational principles that everybody agrees with, mm-hmm. but then everybody branches off into something else. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, the reason they think this is because they feel like what they believe is right.
Yep.
I'm like,
very strongly.
I'm like, that's fine. I'm like, none of us are right. That's my actual
about
stance.
About something.
Yeah. Like, about, like, we, yeah, we're right on one thing, mm-hmm. Christ.
Amen. That's it.
Everything past that, you don't have a full understanding. You see through a glass darkly.
Yeah.
Like, you're trying to figure it out. I don't care what it is. Mm-hmm. It's not the full weight. And even if it is, it ain't, because it came out of your mouth.
Right.
And your mouth is not all knowing. Mm-hmm. And you don't know. You're speaking for somebody that's trying to get a landscape view, and your eyes are closed.
Right.
Hey, what does that look like? Hey, it looks like my hand.
Yeah.
All right, I'll tell you when you get to heaven. It's fine. Right. No problem.
Actually, that was the
I'll work it out later. It's fine.
The lines on your fingers are.
Yeah, but I'm, you know, I try to approach things like that. Especially, that's just Christianity. Like, when it's between me and you, I'm like, well, you know, I feel a certain way, and that's how I feel.
You just like to mess with people. That's all. That's
where. I just like to mess with you. Because
it's not just me. Like, you just like messing with people.
I don't like messing with anybody.
People just say regular stuff, and you'd be like,
eh. Yeah, you never know. Because you know what?
Like, this is not of solid fact.
It's because I'm left and right brain, Chelsea. That's what it is. It's my left-handed and right-handedness.
Okay.
I have to see all sides, because there's always caveats to most things. And when people speak in definitives, what I'm saying to them is like, well, let's not be too hasty.
Right.
When people say, you always have to, but I'm like, well, that's not necessarily true. Mm-hmm. Right. Because I want them to be informed.
Right.
Yeah. So that's fine. Mm-hmm. Don't be hating. Don't be hating, Joe.
You're funny.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you're good.
I would definitely say, like, yeah, so premarital counseling, because that's really going to help you. And depending on who your counselors are, like, they might be using, like, some sort of curriculum or book or whatever that's, like, super-duper thorough. Like, I definitely know that our premarital counseling helped us communicatively and just with understanding that we're different. Mm-hmm. It did give us a heads up, because that book, His Needs, Her Needs, that was very powerful in the way that it explained like people's love languages being different, and then people just gender wise being different.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm wired a certain way based on who I am as a person, which dictates my love languages, and then based on my gender, and then you as well. And then it's like, we come to each other trying to show each other love in the way that we receive love, you know, but then it's like, okay, I'm cuddling with Ron and I'm talking to him about his day, because quality time and physical touch. I'm talking to him about his day with my phone off and no television or anything. And we're just talking and snuggling. And I feel loved. And I feel like I'm loving you. And you're just like, I don't feel loved at all. And I'm just like, well, what else do you want me to do, Ron? And it's like, actually,
cook me a meal.
Exact acts of service. And gift giving are yours.
Feet.
So you're very much a do something for me, or the way you've explained it in your case, it's more of a do something that I would have had to do if you didn't do it. Like do something to take something off my plate.
Right.
That's a love language for you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's not a love language. That's how that love language plays out for you.
Sure.
You know, so because you really don't care if I get you gifts.
No.
Like you don't actually want. You're a very good gift giver, though. Yes, so that's more of just like a talent than like a need for you. But as far as acts of service, that very much is your love language. Mm-hmm. And but for you, it's not just like. Because I do stuff all the time, but if it's not something that matters to you, then it doesn't work.
It's like, yeah, it's right.
Right. So it's like, okay, well, I need to actually, like you, and that came through communication and time and observation for me to understand that it's like, oh, like if I just take stuff off of his plate, if I do something that makes your life easier, then that seems like an act of service to you. Like, then you're able to understand that and perceive it as love.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, we can get so caught up in just, like, trying to do something for each other that we would love.
Yeah.
And then feeling so rejected and sad when it's like, but you're just, you didn't like it and you didn't appreciate it and it's not enough. And then, yeah, what do you want to say?
No, what you just said, it made me think of this, is that literally the only way to actually really, let me say this right, the only actual way to guarantee or even bring about the change that you want in a marriage is through time.
Yeah.
And people are shortcutting their marriages and the time that's needed for that to actually happen. They won't even get to it.
Yeah.
Because they're not working the steps. It's like they have the struggles in the beginning and they may or may not get addressed.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times they probably don't. Like there's something you don't like or something you expect that you're not getting, or there's something you don't expect to get, but you're getting, even though you don't want it. And now you can't get past that.
Yeah.
And you end up in year two, year three, you're just like, yo.
This ain't what I thought it was.
And now the time that, because here's a case, it actually might take 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Might take six.
Mm-hmm.
But if you cut it off at three.
You never got there.
Matter of fact, and here's even deeper, Joe. If you cut it off at three, you'll think that marriage doesn't work.
Mm.
Whereas if you would have actually stretched it out to maybe 4.5, you'll realize it could work, but maybe it didn't work with that person.
Mm-hmm.
That's an observation. I'll say that.
Yeah.
Is that the worse off you end your marriage, the less faith you'll probably have in marriage.
Yeah.
Is that, I tried marriage. It did not work at all.
Mm-hmm.
Not realizing, like, you're cooking gumbo.
Mm-hmm.
You're cooking mole.
Yeah, come on now.
You're cooking whatever soup or broth that Gordon Ramsay's always talking about.
Right.
A bolognese. A bolognese takes off 7 days. It's like, this mole's been stewing for 18 days. It's just like, what are y'all cooking?
Right.
Like, oh my gosh. It's like, you can't. Right. They literally always like, yo, you can't make a beef bowl. You can't make a bolognese sauce in an hour. I'm like, okay.
Yes, you can. It's what everyone does at home.
Like, what do you think people be doing at home? Anybody making bolognese for tomorrow? Right. It's like, are you crazy?
Right.
Yeah. But it's your marriage is a slow stew.
A slow simmer. It's a crock pot.
It's a crock pot.
It's not an Instapot.
It's not an Instapot. It don't come together like, oh, I need to come together quickly. Right? It's not just gonna be like, oh, this is everything I needed it to be in this crock pot. It only took me 15 minutes. It's
right.
Like,
no.
That chicken is raw.
Mm-hmm.
That flour ain't even cooked out all the way.
Yeah.
It doesn't taste like nothing. There's no depth of flavor. There's no seasoning.
Yeah.
And you end up shortcutting and say, you know what? This ain't right. Cut the crock pot off.
Mm-hmm. And like, here's the thing, too. Sometimes, like what you were saying about the chicken is raw and like stuff like that. Sometimes you have all the right ingredients in the crock pot, but it just wasn't done cooking. And it's like, you gotta keep cooking it.
Keep cooking it.
For those flavors to break down and for things to be fully done and for you to really reap the benefits of it and enjoy it. And that's the thing. It's so enjoyable on the back end.
On the back end. And on the front end, too.
And on the front end.
Yeah, it's not all bad.
No, no, no. And I mean, when we first got married, it was cute.
Cute.
It was cute.
To somebody.
You know, like our honeymoon was cute. And, you know, just like coming home to our apartment was cute. Furniture shopping was cute. Yikes. Everything was cute. And just, you know, free sex having cute.
Sure enough.
And then pregnancy.
Cute. Not cute.
Sickness.
What are we doing here?
Bills.
Oh, God.
It's like everything just all at one time, just like, and more responsibility, time restraints. And it ain't just, oh, we just have all this time to be together. It's like, no, like, I haven't actually spent time with you. And me, I'm a quality time love language person.
Yeah.
So that was so hard for me. Where it's just like, dang, like, we ain't got no time together. I don't feel loved, you know? And then... And stuff like that, it's such a downward spiral, because somebody who needs quality time to feel loved, especially as a woman, typically women, sex is more of an emotional connection than a physical one. So then it's like, if you're not being emotionally stimulated, then you aren't really open to physical stimulation.
Yeah.
You know? And then it's like, okay, now it's kind of making me standoffish. Like, now I don't want to touch and all of that, because it's like, you got to fill my love bank first, as Mike Dixon would say.
As
my love bank is empty.
Actually, from the book.
Yes, as his book says.
No.
Really? Okay. Exactly. Gary Chapman is that?
Yes.
Okay. So as Gary Chapman says, you have to fill the love bank, you know? So, you know, but it's like, okay, there's things that, you know, see, cooking is such a good analogy.
Hey, well, keep going with it.
It's such a good analogy, because it's like, it's the difference between marinating before you cook.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, we have had some experience. Ooh, I know exactly what it was. I remember Heather from our church made some fried fish that was banging.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, what made this fried fish so banging? And I remembered being at the church the day before, and she seasoned the fish the day before and put it in the fridge. And I remember telling you, you know what? I think it's because she seasoned it yesterday.
Yeah.
And it really got, like, in there.
Yeah.
You know, because when you season meat, it's hard to get it, to get the seasoning to stick, go through to the inside.
Right.
So, like, most of the time, the outside tastes banging, but the inside is like, it just tastes like meat.
Mm-hmm.
Not flavorful, but just, it's all right.
Right.
But the outside is where all the flavor is. But when you marinate things and let it sit.
Yeah, and let it, breaking it down.
It starts breaking it down. It starts getting inside of there and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And then you cook it.
Right.
You know, and it's like when you rush the process. When you rush the process, and I feel like... So many people preach, you know, I'd say for like the past 10 years or so, if not a little more, you know, there's been all these, you know, just older people that talk about how younger people have no patience and no work ethic and no, like, determination, no grit, you know, because we're like this, they call it the microwave generation.
Yeah.
You know, but we're the smartphone generation.
Yes.
Literally.
Literally.
I need to go somewhere. I don't got to pull out a map and read nothing.
Nothing.
Hey Siri, I don't even got to type it in no more.
Exactly.
Hey Siri, where's this? Hey Siri, what's the temperature? Hey Siri.
Right.
Alexa,
yes.
Play this.
Wow.
Alexa, do that.
Yeah.
And it's like you expect everything in life.
Quickly.
And I'm thinking about the previous generations that stuck it out.
Yeah.
They had way more stick it out in them.
It was a part of their life structure.
Because it was their
there
life.
There was no other way.
Life was sticking it out. Life was being patient.
Certainly.
Life was working hard.
That's right.
And now everything is, you don't even have to work a 9-to-5.
Oh.
You can just 2 hours a day on the computer in your pajamas. Everything, I think over time, it's like the mission of humanity seems to be, how can we make things where we don't have to do anything at all?
Yeah.
You know, that's the goal. How do you make it easier, simpler, faster?
Yeah.
How? You know, because anything that is those things are attractive.
That's right.
You know, because who really wants to?
Yeah.
You know, nobody really wants to have to work in all of that, you know, but it's just so interesting, because it's like marriage is not one of those things. And it's like, so a lot of, it makes a lot of sense that we're in a generation now that doesn't want to do it.
Yeah. Because why would we?
Because why do I want to do anything that's hard? Right. Why do I want to do anything that takes a lot of work, that takes time, that isn't just perfect from the beginning?
Yeah. There goes the rub, would be the saying.
Mm-hmm.
Is that we are that generation. Well, not we, because we were kind of on the tail end or the earlier part, however you would say it.
Mm-hmm.
We're on the cusp. Like, we still have some of those old things. Just
right. My first phone was a flip phone.
Right. That's funny. Yeah, mine too. But by that time, we were already who we are at that time.
Yeah.
It wasn't like integrated into our lives where, you know, like.
I'm sorry.
That's funny.
Now I'm just thinking about our technology when we were kids.
Listen, we were hype over Tetris on the phone.
Oh yeah.
Oh, you got Tetris?
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's fine. Let me see your phone. Come on now. Little girls in the class, here, you can see the phone. Let me see that phone, girl. Come on. Playing Tetris. Horrible.
That's funny.
Breaker ball.
With them big old computers with the big butts on the back.
It's hilarious.
Horrible graphics, dial up.
Terrible. If you didn't have to hit mad buttons to send a regular text message, don't talk to me.
No, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah. But that just the way it's ingrained into them is like, yeah, that it makes so much sense.
Mm-hmm.
That in that everything we have is made to be simple, easy, fast.
Mm-hmm.
And now if something, like, we have no tolerance for adversity.
Yikes.
What people worry about with our kids, because they have everything. They don't have no struggle. They eat. It ain't like our parents and their parents where mm-hmm. it's like, hey, we had one chicken for however many people's here. We got mm-hmm. one chicken.
And you going to eat it or you going to starve.
You going to eat it or you going to starve. Ain't going to be no.
Ain't no picky eaters.
We got chicken, string beans, and rice. It ain't no gravy because we ain't got no flour. All right, you eat that plain rice or be hungry. I don't know what to tell you.
Right.
And you're going to get a half a piece of chicken.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
If that.
Might just get some scrap. I don't mm-hmm. know. Right? But our kids is like, kids wearing Jordans. And mm-hmm. I'm not mad at them wearing Jordans if you can afford them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like you're wearing designer shoes. They're going to school with everything they want. They mm-hmm. they eat what they want. You get it for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like we've created a culture of just literally people. We don't have a tolerance for adversity. Somebody, yeah. and this is where it's like a big academic with bullying. And
yeah.
it's like, you know, bullying was just a part of life at a certain point. It's just like, well, you guess you're getting bullied. I guess you need to do something about that. Now it's like, oh, no, we're going to go to the news.
Yeah.
And it's like, what do you mean? I mean, like, you know.
I'm sorry, that's not funny, but no.
It's not, but. But
you're right, though.
It's like, what?
It's
what
like, this is news.
This is news? It's like, oh, like, I thought it was like, it's kind of part. Like, hey, somebody wants to bully you. Hey, you should stand up to them or keep getting bullied or do something, you know. I'm not, you know, condoning violence. I'm
at
not
all.
Saying that, but I'm certainly condoning you standing up for yourself and not allowing people to do any. And a lot of times people being bullied is just people talking.
Yeah.
Like, we have a generation
just
that,
words.
Yeah, we can't, they can't tolerate people talking about them.
Yeah.
Which is like, wow.
And I mean, I want to be clear, though, because I was bullied and it had a very bad effect on me, and I'm not from this generation.
It also had a very good effect on you.
In what way?
I don't know. But I would imagine. Listen, just like I was sharing with Christy today, it's like, listen, anything, and I got this from Myron Golden, because, and he was just breaking it down. It's like, yo, there is no good without bad, and
Amen.
There is no bad without good.
Sure.
He's a guy who literally had polio, and he had polio because he was born in an underfunded hospital because he was born in 1960. In the South, where there were still segregated hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
And he ended up getting polio, which I believe is something to do with infection when you're born,
mm-hmm.
which is saying that probably would have never happened if I was in a better hospital.
Mm-hmm.
But because of his leg, he said, I've never ran anywhere. He can't run.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it's polio, yeah. But he's saying that because I've never ran, my brain had time to, it's like, they move fast, and he has like all these brothers, literally like six brothers. They're being brothers, like mm-hmm. they're boys. I've had all this time to move fast. They move fast, and I never move fast like that. So my brain learned how to move really fast, and I had time to sit and think while they ran.
Wow.
and is like, yeah, so why would I be?
It's going to make me cry, though.
Okay, you funny. But the point, and he said it about a lot of things. It's like, and it says it in God's words, like what the enemy meant for evil, God meant for good.
Absolutely.
And that the good, that there's always a good that comes from whatever evil there was. You for just have sure. to find it.
You do.
And
you do.
A part of that, for all people who've ever been bullied, is that you know what it feels like to be bullied.
Yeah.
Which means you'll never bully anybody.
For
ever.
Sure.
And you won't tolerate people being bullied either.
Very true.
Right? But you also have a tolerance for adversity.
Mm-hmm.
You have a higher tolerance. Generally, you should have a better tolerance to be like, hey, well, we don't like you. And you're like, and what does that have to do with me? I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully. Sometimes it doesn't get all the way there.
And that's what I wanted right. to interject about. Go ahead and finish, though.
Well, but generally that's the good. Like, mm-hmm. there's a good side of all bad things.
Yeah.
Which is hard to accept, because it's just like, well, what was good or what was bad?
Specifically when you're in Christ, because then he can do the work when you allow him, when you, you know, give it to him.
Well, yeah, you can give him the credit. You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, but like, it definitely like messed with my self-esteem very badly. And I was just like in the kitchen earlier, I felt like the Lord was kind of giving me a little bit of a revelation, because I was thinking to myself, and don't ask me how I got here, but I was, you know, you just be thinking when you're alone. I was thinking to myself, like, you know, I've always been a humble person. And I felt like God was saying to me, there's a difference between having a lack of confidence and being humble. And I felt like he was saying, like, just showing me that, you know, sometimes I don't give people certain opportunities because if they got the confidence, like if they received the praise and elevation, they would not be humble.
That's right.
You know, and I was just like, because I was thinking to myself, like, you know, well, like, but I'm a humble person. Like, I wouldn't be. And he's just like, no, you just don't have confidence.
Mm.
Like, if you were to gain confidence, you would not be humble.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, dang.
Came at you.
I was like, oh, dang. That, I mean.
Lord came at you quick.
Oh, dang.
Quickly and swiftly.
You know, and I'm going to just go ahead and share what I was thinking about, because I've been struggling a bit, because like I have friends that I sung with when I was younger, you know, that like right now, like they're going to be singing at our church tomorrow and everything. They came to a rehearsal, and like literally last week, the group that I used to sing with, which they're a part of, was singing at another thing we went to and all of that. And it's hard for me to see people that never stopped.
Yeah.
Because these are people where we all were young, you know, and okay. You know, we were okay singers, you know, like, but we all loved to sing, and we all would just sing all the time and keep trying and working on it and working on it and trying to get better, right?
Yeah.
And then it's like you see these people that never stopped that got so much better, you know, and they were always good, you know, but like clearly you can tell that they've still been singing all the time and practicing over the past over 10 years since I haven't been singing with them anymore, you know, and then meanwhile, I have not. So it's like, I'm still just okay, you know, like I'm okay, you know, but then you have people that like really honed their craft and are now like really great, you know, and it's hard for me to see, because I still love to sing. And when I was younger, that really is all I ever worked toward.
Yeah.
Like all of my time, like having gone to an arts high school and everything, like all of my time went toward that, and all of my future plans were about that.
Yeah.
Like literally. And then it's like one day I just had a switch, you know, where like, okay, that's not my life goals, you know, but it didn't mean it's not something I still love and like desire, you know, and not for fame. I've never been someone who just wanted a lot of recognition or notoriety. I literally just love to sing. Period. Like I actually hate attention. You know that, because you know me. I'd be like hiding. Like, oh, and Chelsea did this. I'm just like, don't announce it. Like I like to just kind of do it and then be in the back. Like, you know, which God really had me thinking earlier. I'm like, oh, is that just because I'm like insecure and not because I'm actually humble?
Yeah,
like, wow, that's crazy.
Yes.
but it's weird that we can mix that up, though.
Yeah,
we can actually mix that up and think that humility is not being confident. They're not the same.
Yeah,
you can actually know that you're great and be humble.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that a lot of times, especially in the church, we're taught not to like toot your own horn and everything, you know, and it's like, oh, well, if people come up to me and say, oh, hey, this is my friend Chelsea, like, oh, yeah, that girl can sing. And I'm just like, oh, no, I'm not that great.
Yeah, false humility.
That's false humility.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, that's just so interesting to me. So I just wanted to share like where that thought process came from or whatever, because I think I was like just kind of thinking to myself that like, you know, I don't know. I guess I was just thinking to myself, like, sometimes I do wish I had certain opportunities, you know, or just was able to, like, do certain things and everything. And we sometimes get in those little pompous modes where we're just like, what I deserve or what I've earned, you know, and like, oh, and I wouldn't fumble it. You know, like some people are out here being all flashy and being all whatever, and they ain't even doing it for you. They're just singing in a bar somewhere. Like, Lord, I would be at the church house. But
the church house. Yes. Amen.
You know, but it's just so, anyway, that was just a little tidbit from the life and times of Chelsea and the Lord. Yeah. But let me get back to the topic at hand.
Yeah, well, is that the good that comes from bullying and adversity?
Yes. So I was very confident about singing, acting, dancing, all the things as a kid. I was just like our daughter. Literally, our daughter is just like she... Someone that she's only met one other time before came over our house today. And as soon as she comes in the door, our daughter goes, hi, can I ask you a question? And she says, what? Sure. I'm telling you, literally, hi, can I ask you a question? Yeah, sure. What's that? Did you want to be a pop star when you grow up? And she was like, I mean, kind of, sometimes, I think. And she literally just started singing. And... But like in a really showy way. And I was just like, what are you doing?
Drawing. Draw McGee.
But literally, like, that was me as a kid. I just was like, oh, because I love singing. I love dancing. And every time I do it, everybody says I'm so good. Right? So you go everywhere and you're like, because I'm awesome.
Obviously. Hand me that mic. Please.
Literally. I'm just like, because obviously I'm the best one in the room. Clearly. You know? So it's like all just, but you're a kid and everybody, you know, supports you as a child.
Hopefully.
And then it's like friends are taught to be nice when you're little. Yes. So they're just like, oh, wow, Chelsea, that was really great. So and I'm just nice. Like, thanks, Susan, you know? And then, and then all of a sudden... All of a sudden, you're an eighth grader, and you don't live with white people anymore. I'm going to just say it plain. I'm going to just make it plain up in here today.
These inner city youths.
These, I went from living in a white, rich suburb to living in Camden, New Jersey. Let's just make it plain. And I go to school with these Camden black children.
Yes.
That I love dearly and are still my friends to this day. Sweet. Okay. Like my people. But anyway, you know, I go to this school and they're just like, why are you dressed like that? Why do you talk like that? Ew. Why don't you do your hair different? Oh, why do you walk like that? Your breath stinks. Do you did it? Like literally just everything.
Everything.
Everything. Just nitpicking and nagging and just. And of course, I had like that white girl twang and. Mm-hmm. You know, like all the different things. And they're just like, you, ew, like, where are you even from? And I'm like, well, I live down the street from you, actually. Yeah. Really? Why do you talk like that then? And it's like, I just had never been confronted. And then I would sing and they'd be like, ew, you sing like your mom. Because this was a church school, by the way.
Of course.
But it was still Camden children. Yes. And, you know, black culture is just different. Like we are
confrontational.
Right. What is the word though? Like we just like come at each other for fun.
Oh, we tear each other down.
Yeah. Yes. You know, so it's like, but I wasn't used to that. Like my family was not that way.
Right.
And you know, but yeah, so they're doing all of that and my mom sings or whatever and she would sing at church a lot and some of these kids attended the church. Mm-hmm. So they'd be like, "You sound like your mom. You sound like an old lady." And I was just like, "Oh.
Thank you."
Okay. You know, I mean, I always, and that was, would have never been an offensive thing to me in the past because I always thought my mom was a good singer, you know, but when they started saying like an old lady and like you just sound old and all this type of stuff, I was just like, oh, that's not good.
Jesus, so
and it's like literally just everything and anything. Like I was trying to get attention from boys and like you always walk like extra, like you're switching when the boys are around and blah, 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 blah. And like it literally just got me to a point where like I was just like stiff. Because I'm just like, no matter what I say, no matter what I do, I can't even walk. Yes. Like, everything is going to get torn apart. Mm-hmm. And, like, it really affected me really badly.
Yes.
You know? And then, like, moving forward in life, like, the next year I go into an arts high school. And now I'm surrounded by talented kids.
Yeah.
Because this is, like, a gathering place.
Yeah.
For people that auditioned to get in here and are good enough to be here.
Yes.
And, you know, so it's not anymore just like I'm just in a classroom full of like a random mixture of students. And they're like, can anybody in here sing at the Christmas concert?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, oh, wow, that girl can sing. No, everybody here can sing.
Everybody
here dances. All the things. You know, you're not special. You know, and you're not that great. Really, you're a little behind the,
the curve.
You're a little behind. You know, and then it's like everything just shifted. Everything just shifted. But what I will say is good is that I think that the Lord had to like calm my ambition. When it came to all those types of things, I think that if I was so blinded by, because I mean, here's the reality, like people who grow up with, like I did all the things, a dance school for years, like vocal lessons, every school musical, like all the, I was in modeling school, I low key was in like the modeling school agency, all of that. And like my trajectory was, I'm trying to be a famous something, mm-hmm. you know? And it's like people who are on that trajectory, especially from when you're young, you know, that just consumes you. It's like, where does God fit into that? Mm. You know, unless you're like raised in church and they tell you you're going to sing gospel, you know, but that wasn't the case for me. You know, it was when I was younger, but in high school, not so much. Mm. You know, it was like, I can just sing whatever and now I'm going to be Beyonce. Yeah, so, you know, in my mind, you know, but it's like, I feel like the Lord had to kind of like, I've seen throughout my life, and I just hope this blesses somebody because for some reason we're on this topic right now, but I hope this blesses somebody. For some reason, it's like you don't, the reason that you think you're gaining certain knowledge and going through certain experiences is for your own plans.
Yeah.
And then God is like, no, I needed you to get all of that experience and all of that knowledge, but not for what you're trying to use it for. Mm-hmm. And sometimes he'll like derail the train. Because you're just going full force to the west. And he's like, now I, okay, you got what you needed on the way, but I got to reroute you because I actually need you to use it over here.
Yeah.
Like to my glory, you know. And I've seen how, you know, we're at church and our pastor's like, I want to have plays.
Yeah.
And the girl that he goes to moves away. And I was just helping. But now I'm doing because she's gone. Mm-hmm. But I can because of the experiences that I've had and the things I've been a part of. Mm-hmm. Oh, like we need a children's choir director. I can do that. Sure. Oh, we need blah, blah, blah. And it's like, God is just like, yeah, like there's a purpose for it. It's not the purpose that you thought it was. It's not what you thought it was for, but like it's being used for my glory. And a lot of stuff still isn't to be seen, you know, like what he's going to use all of those things for. But I think it was good that I didn't, like that was what changed my mind, was like not feeling like I actually was that good. Like, you know, and that sounds so bad and sad that it's like, oh, you don't believe in yourself anymore. But it's like, no, God needed me to be like humble in like a, you know, whether for whatever reason, it may not have the right motives behind the humility all the time. But like God needed me to be humble in order for me to just sit down and be like, well, Lord, what do you have for me? Because what I thought I had for me is gone. And now I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what my purpose is. I don't know where I'm going. And now it's like, okay, well, Lord, why am I here? What am I doing?
Sure.
And now I'm in a position where you can put me where you want me to be.
Yeah. broken, humbled.
It's interesting.
Yes, it is interesting.
But anyway, all of that was a rabbit hole, all because you mentioned bullying. And I was just saying that, you know, bullying can be really bad.
Yeah, sure.
It can be bad. I don't want to make it sound like if you are affected by bullying in any way, like if you're not able to just immediately shake it off, that something's wrong with you. It's like, no, that can really, you know, pierce, mm-hmm. you know, and let's not act like it doesn't affect people. But at the same time, I do believe that people bounced back from things better.
Well, yeah, they had
in a different generation.
because people now, people are a lot more prone to suicide.
Yeah.
And, you know, just anything else that would have to avoid any sort of confrontation.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least in certain communities and things. But, mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, and I'm not trying to, you know, not trying to make light of bullying necessarily
sure.
either. But I am trying to really cast light on the fact that, you know, there are responses that you can have to somebody messing with you,
mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, suicide is not one of those responses that it should be in play.
Right.
Or, you know, trying to, oh, I'm never going to go to school. It's like most of the times people aren't even putting their hands on you.
Mm-hmm.
They're just talking.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, we have to, and that's cool. And that's something for everybody, even parents and people in their marriage and raising their kids, to really have an understanding. It's like what you instill in your children has to come out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we were instilling that generation. I think we had to, we did, the generation that has kids now, they didn't have adversity either.
Right.
So now they think like, oh, well, everything should be fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll be all right. And then when they hit any type of adversity, it's like, what do we even do now?
Right.
I don't know.
But is this?
If you weren't instilling them with that to actually expect adversity.
Yeah.
Like, hey, what are you going to say when somebody says this? What are you going to do when somebody does this?
Mm-hmm.
And then when they say, I don't know, you could tell them. And you put that in them so they know, like, oh, this is how I handle the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And at a certain point, it was super mandatory. When you actually go back and really in the history, where it's like, I can't even imagine Deep South, mm-hmm. where if your child did something, you think of Emmett Till.
Yeah.
And
Mercy.
And really it's because he was from, I believe he was from Chicago or something of that nature. And then he goes down and visits family somewhere down south where the worlds are different.
Mm-hmm.
And now.
Wow, poor thing.
He does. And here's the thing. The woman lied about what he said
yeah.
or did. I don't know if he did anything.
Right.
But if he had have done something, there was a real consequence to what you had did.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And when we ingrain that, like, they didn't have choices, the people of our previous generation, they didn't have choices to be playing with, like, oh, are we going to ingrain our kids or are we not?
Right.
Are we going to show them, like, oh, this is how you have to be or not? There was like, no, we're going to show them because he can't be out here doing something that'll get him killed.
Right.
Or, you know, at the severely beaten.
Yeah.
Because it was a thing.
Yeah.
But as time progresses and you know, especially as African-Americans, we do better and better. We have less and less adversity.
Mm-hmm.
And we have less and less of a tolerance for just sticking out anything because there's nothing to stick out.
Mm-hmm.
Other than like working. We always got work. People will work hard for like a business or to try to progress. It's like, that's fine. But adversity with people, they'll quit a job.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like this person and they keep blah, blah, blah. I got to quit. Right. Oh, yeah. All that. Now, that's a big circle. That's way around the. Yes.
It's
but
fine.
Bringing that into your marriage is like it's a recipe for absolute failure.
Yeah. You can't go into marriage thinking it's going to be like good, like where it's going to end up at the start.
It's true. Right. Can't be.
It's a destination. Yeah,
it is a destination. Right. You can't be thinking like, you know, you can't have year three engine
mm-hmm.
and think you're going to get past it. Like, yeah, this engine is going to last for 3 years.
Right.
It's like, no, you got to treat that thing.
Yeah.
You got to put a high class engine in it and you got to treat that engine.
Mm-hmm.
Something that'll last.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hopefully this was encouraging for you. We don't want to be discouraging is that. Your first year in marriage and really your early years in marriage are supposed to be filled with contention. I'm sorry, not contention, conflict, right? And you were supposed to come together and resolve the conflict and work on it. But the key to getting out of those first years is not to cut them short
mm-hmm.
and actually make the most of it. Don't go in and cut something that doesn't need to be cut yet.
Yeah.
Don't go in and stop it when you're still in the marinating process. You're still working stuff out. You're still figuring each other out. I'm still figuring her out. You know, she's still figuring me out.
Yeah.
It's harder for her because men don't talk about nothing, right? And it's harder for men because men are just sometimes, right? They just don't know what's like. What are you doing? Like, what? Like, why don't you just, why don't you just act right, sir? Man. So we just thank you guys for being here. More to come.
Yeah.
Yes. If you've made it to the end and you're not subscribed, that is a crime at the BTO Marriage Podcast. All right. If you are here, hit the subscribe button, like, follow, share, all that good stuff. All right. And we will see you next week.